Welcome to the Dreamcatcher Podcast, a place where you'll receive a boost of inspiration, practical advice, and tools to maximize your success and personal happiness. And that's not all. You'll also get plenty of guidance on how you can use your gifts, talents, and compassion to contribute towards making the world a better place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a preview of what's in store and to also receive a free ebook. To sign up, simply visit www.thedreamcatch.com. Now it's my pleasure to introduce you to the host of the Dreamcatcher podcast, Celine Chinoy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Dreamcatcher podcast interview special. I've always been fascinated with the beauty and diversity that exists on our gorgeous planet. There are all kinds of amazing animal and plant species out there in so many different shapes, colors, and sizes. The shorthand used to describe this biological diversity is called biodiversity, which refers to all of Earth's species, including human linguistic and cultural differences. Understood not just separately, but in how they interact so as to form ecosystems. Today, I'm going to be speaking with someone who's been heavily involved in the research and exploration of the biodiversity on our planet for most of his life, George Paul. George developed an intense interest in the natural world when he was a teenager. He attended Yale Law School and became a practicing trial lawyer and a best-selling internationally cited author in the realm of legal philosophy. But George's true love is the natural world. George has traveled the globe recording bird songs, filming the life of coral reef ecosystems, and writing and lecturing about the importance of preserving Earth's biological diversity, including framing the International Convention on Biological Diversity during the United Nations' first Earth Summit. During my interview, George shared his thoughts on how societal attitudes should evolve so as to create a sustainable society for the third millennium, and what each one of us can do to preserve and stay connected to nature. If you're someone who cares about our planet and you're curious about how you can be part of the solution to the current issues that we face as a species, then you'll enjoy listening to our discussion. Hey, George, how are you?
I'm doing great this morning, Celine. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's wonderful to be speaking with you today, and I'm really looking forward to learning about your thoughts on the current state of our environment and what each one of us can do to preserve it and stay connected to the beauty of nature.
Great. Well, yeah. Let's talk about it.
Yeah. And you've been involved in the protection of the diversity of life on Earth for many years now, and that's why I felt that you would be the perfect person to give me and my listeners a balanced and thought-provoking perspective on these issues. So thank you so much for agreeing to do this.
Well, I'm honored that you want to interview me.
Yeah.
So that's great.
Right. Okay. So let's begin by speaking about your background in this area. What got you started on your path to exploring and preserving the biodiversity that exists on Earth?
Well, you know, that's a personal question, and it involves my personal history, and I hope people find that interesting. But my grandfather, my mother's father, was a botanist, and he was also the president of the university. And so he had a lot of friends that were biologists, and I became interested in birds and birding when I was about 15. Mm-hmm. And one of my grandfather's friends was a really preeminent tropical ornithologist named George M. Sutton.
Okay.
And he kind of took me under his wing, so to speak, and became a mentor. And I visited with him at, you know, the museum where he was working. And that led to me going down to the tropics to bird in the tropics. Mm-hmm. Starting when I was in high school, I went down to Mexico and actually went down to a place where you can't even travel now. Mm-hmm. It's been closed to travel by the U.S. government. And I started birding in high school and really became captivated by those kind of experiences. And, you know, I kept that up, those interests up, you know, throughout high school, throughout college, throughout law school. I did a lot of birding in law school. I was up on the East Coast where there were different kind of habitats. Mm-hmm. And then I got out and started, you know, my profession, which involves, you know, the law. Mm-hmm. And I became just absolutely fixated and obsessed and mesmerized by the issue of extinction, yep. mass extinction.
Right.
And the flip side of that is evolution.
Was the law that you practiced connected to, you know, the environment and protecting the environment?
Part of it was, not all of it, but I handled disputes in court mm-hmm. mainly, and so I know how to examine and cross-examine expert witnesses. That's sort of one of my specialties, is working with experts. But, you know, I have handled major environmental matters, public mm-hmm. interest environmental matters. But what happened to me is a lot of these things kind of came together, and I became very interested in international environmental law,
right?
Including working with something with the United Nations in what was called the Earth Summit. It was in Rio de Janeiro, okay. and there were international instruments that people were drafting. And then I worked on a very, very important international convention called the Convention on Biological Diversity. Mm-hmm. So I have done international environmental work. And I have seen the progress that's been made in a lot of these areas because I got into it about 35 years ago.
Right.
I have a little bit more to say on what got me started on the path. Mm-hmm. I really, and this I think shows that you can continue and should continue to learn for your entire life. But,
right.
you know, even in my early 30s, just becoming obsessed with a lot of these intellectual problems and studying all kinds of things. I continue to get new mentors. I continue to, you know, as technology advanced. Mm-hmm. And when I got into this, there were no computers, basically, that a person could use. Mm-hmm. But now the recording devices and the photographic equipment is just so awesomely advanced and
right.
affordable that the citizen, the normal citizen, can go out there and start documenting nature in a way that's just phenomenally advanced. And
right.
you see it all over the internet now.
Yeah.
Didn't do that 20 years ago. You'd have to have an $80,000 camera.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now the $2,000 cameras can take better video than the $80,000 cameras could 20 years ago.
Right, right.
So.
Right. Yeah.
That's in a nutshell what got me started. It's a continuum. You know, if you're interested in something, you start off and you continue to grow.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. And you've done a lot of traveling and, you know, I've seen some of the amazing images that you've taken, some of the videos. And I was wondering, during your travels, what is one thing that surprises you most about our planet? What can we learn from that?
Well, I've been actually thinking about this topic a lot. You know, when you're younger, you're very idealistic and you think in abstractions. You think of nature as being a pristine thing where there's no humans, no civilization. You think of these large preserved eco reserves,
mm-hmm.
and they're incredibly important, and we need to preserve them for many reasons we can discuss in detail if you want. But then, you know, the bottom line is you have to be practical. There is civilization. There is this huge booming world population.
Mm-hmm.
And so nature is kind of getting eaten away. But what I have learned, and this is incredibly important, is that even where humanity is making impacts, humanity can kind of have a marriage with nature so you can improve habitats. You can make habitats and all the wildlife will then come there and start living there. And life will rebound. You can totally destroy a place and then you can kind of build it back, give it more water, a wetland will form, and then thousands of creatures will move in, use that as their home. So I think the main takeaway here about the planet and about ecosystems is that we can rebuild, okay? We want pristine areas, and of course, obviously, we'll have cities, but along the way, the interaction, we can encourage nature, we can celebrate nature, we can improve habitats, we can have birds in our yard, we can create wetlands, we can, you know, so I don't know the exact word for it, but
that's very comforting to know.
The concept of, well, it really is, because, you know, if you just think of, well, you know, we destroyed this, you know, it's gone forever. Not really. You can make the boundary of pure nature and civilization. You can make it more
sustainable.
I don't know what the right word is. Yeah, sustainable. And, you know, it really isn't anything like pure nature anymore, because humanity is basically impacting the global atmosphere and the climate so much that we're almost like the whole world is almost becoming a park. I know that sounds horrible, but we have to kind of care for it, like we're tending a lovely, beautiful garden of nature.
Right. Right. But isn't there like a tipping point? Because that's what I've been reading. We've reached a point where we can't really go back. That's the scale of damage that we've done to the environment. I mean, I've read that in a couple of places. Is that true?
Yeah, a lot of the studying and reading I have done is about this exact issue, because I'm interested in mass extinction. Mm-hmm. I see the macroscopic world, okay, in terms of what is called complexity theory.
Okay.
It's basically the second law of thermodynamics. It's how the universe is unfolding. It's how it's unzipping, and what they call it is symmetry breaking. So the concept of the tipping point is incredibly important, particularly for the climate.
Right.
What that means is that, you know, you can have increasing change, and then you'll reach a point, and here's the key, is you don't know exactly where it is.
Right.
It can surprise you.
Right.
Boom, you have one little tiny incremental change, and then everything transforms.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I happen to think that, yes, given what we're seeing with the global ecosystem right now, we are reaching tipping points, and it's scary. We don't know what's going to be there. It's like an explosion. You don't know what's going to happen. It's going to happen. We don't know exactly what's going to happen.
Right.
But we do know that we are reaching tipping points. And so, That then tells us a lot about what we should be doing in response.
I was also going to ask what do you think the main threats are in the environment? And I think this ties in well with that.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are so many threats to the environment, and there are different threats in different parts of the globe.
Right.
There are different threats in different cultures. There's a huge number of threats, but I will try to speak right now at sort of the highest level of generality that affects the most people. And I think you hit the nail on the head. It involves the fact that there are tipping points.
Right.
Okay. And let's just talk about the climate.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that everybody's got to remember is that human civilization is no exception. Human civilization depends tremendously on ecosystems.
Right.
Your agricultural productivity, your ability to feed populations, your access to fresh water, you name it. And throughout history, civilizations have basically crashed and fallen apart largely for ecological reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And we have that going on now. I mean, we have this exponentially growing population. We have the fact that there are tipping points in the behavior of the climate. And it's already, you know, believe it or not, in the United States, I saw a figure yesterday, there were over 1 million people in the United States that were displaced because of climate events. For example, in Puerto Rico, I think there were 300,000 refugees from the hurricane there. It destroyed the infrastructure of Puerto Rico, which
is really sad. Yeah.
And in other nations, there are 50 or 100 million people, or soon to be
several hundred million people, or maybe even a billion people in 10 or 20 years that will be refugees, that will be not to be too, you know, negative about things, but these things are going to happen. So what does that mean? On the highest level, we really need to understand that our civilizations and our societies and cultures depend on the functioning, the healthy functioning of ecosystems. We need to be very conservative about our food security, okay? The security of protecting all the rich genetic information in our global ecosystem. Because you know what? We need it because we're going to need to batten down the hatches and survive these, whatever comes out on the other side of these tipping points. And because we're all in it together, we're going to have to get through this.
Right.
And we're going to be going through this process for the next 40 or 50 years. It's going to be the key time in the history of our species. Our great test is going to be whether we can achieve a sustainable world culture, a sustainable civilization.
Yeah.
And we're making a tremendous progress.
Yeah. Well, but don't you think with the new administration in the U.S., you know, with Trump not supporting climate change policies, I mean, some people are a little bit concerned about that as that being a big issue when it comes to protecting the environment and the ecosystem. So people may be wondering, like, if we're not into politics or we're not in any kind of, if we're not policymakers, how can they contribute towards these initiatives?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up because the Trump administration is very controversial and environmentalist.
Yeah, sorry to bring that up, but
I have some thoughts about that.
Yeah.
You know, okay, that's an administration. It's not going to be there forever.
Yeah.
It may only be there for a couple more years.
Yeah.
But the state of California has probably would be the seventh largest economy in the world if it was its own country. It's a huge place with It's a huge economy. They're saying, "No, we don't care what you're doing. We're going to do this. We're going to follow the various climate accords. We're going to have sustainability. We're going to have energy efficiency. We're going to do as much as we can to develop a sustainable culture. We're going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Cities can do it. Communities can do it. Counties can do it. And you can do it in your own backyard.
Right.
You can create a habitat so that migrating birds can. So again, this is you sort of grow out of the idealism and the abstractions of your youth and go into a more practical, realistic approach, which is everything, these complex issues have complex solutions.
Right.
And just because one group of people is screwing up doesn't mean that everybody else has to stop. They can go forward. And indeed, you can make an argument that the policies of the current administration in the United States is causing such a reaction that it's going to benefit environmentalism. Okay.
Yes.
Because again, the world is nonlinear. The world is exponential, and it's very hard to kind of trace cause and effect. So
you have a good point there. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I just want to know, what would a regular Joe or Jane do? What can we do on a daily basis to kind of contribute towards making the environment, to protecting the environment, basically? I mean, besides the obvious, you know, recycling and stuff like that, do you have any other ideas about how we can contribute?
Well, absolutely. I think, you know, we're all responsible for our consciousness, our stream of consciousness.
Right.
And I tend to think of things like a Buddhist would, you know, with the mindfulness, and you need to view your mind as a garden, if you will, that you're tending with the proper thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think we have to have the right mindfulness. But again, there's a lot of local issues. One of my buddies just finished a documentary about this dispute that was going on in his part of the country, which was Missouri, that people were building a wastewater treatment plant. And the plan was to just dump the effluent from the wastewater plant right into the river, the Missouri River. And this is what people did for, you know, decades in the United States. And then on a local level, and we're talking about just a few people, they said, well, that's ridiculous. Why don't we take that effluent and make a wetland out of it?
Okay.
And this will have two results. One, we'll create a habitat where wildlife can live. And two, the wetland provides something that is called an ecosystem service. Our ecosystems provide tremendously valuable services that we don't really have to pay for.
Sure.
In that instance, it's having the water in the wetland filters the water, and the microbes can break down, you know, some of the substances in the wastewater effluent. And it's like a giant filter. It polishes all that water. And so what these people did, they said, okay, we're not going to do that. We're going to actually dump the effluent and we're going to create a wetland. And now it's called Eagle Bluffs. It's got huge numbers of birds, huge numbers of wildlife.
Wow.
You know, all kinds of 350 species of birds for people to go and observe. They can go and live there when they're migrating. They can live there permanently. And all the water is being purified, okay, as a service. So what you had is on a local level, we're talking about, you know, in a town where maybe there were in the matter of the hundreds of people were deciding this, and they were engaged in the media. They were making up little songs.
Mm-hmm.
They were advocating. They were able to create a tremendously valuable local resource.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I think it boils down to who are you? What is your consciousness? What are you thinking in the garden of your mind? And then what are the choices you're presented on a day-to-day basis?
Right.
Do you want to plant the kind of plants that hummingbirds come to? Well,
right.
If you do, you'll have hummingbirds in your life.
Yeah.
Do you want to, you know, influence your local politicians to build a wastewater, make a wetland out of your wastewater?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it all depends on what the facts are. It all depends on what the facts are. But yeah, absolutely. This is part of, again, I hate to get off on Buddhism too much, but, you know, this is part of what Buddha would say is right livelihood. You got to live your life in accordance with the proper ethics.
Yes, I love that. And what I'm gathering from what you're saying is like, just there are opportunities right in your own backyard, but you just have to care enough to like search for them and just be proactive about kind of reaching out and, you know, trying to make a difference.
Yeah, I think so. And I think this is the key, is unless there's that spark and interest and love in the mind of a citizen.
Right.
Okay, this is very difficult. If the citizen has that love of nature and that appreciation of nature, this kind of also sort of falls into play, because the ethos of a culture, the ethos of a civilization will be to worship nature.
Right.
On a spiritual level and almost on a religious level. And this is how, what we're trying to do is figure out the way we should be acting, well, not only now, but the way we better be acting, or we must be acting 40 years from now, or everything's not going to go well. And that has to arise in the attitudes and values of the citizenry of each country.
Yeah, and I think it's also important that, you know, we kind of try to get out of ego mentality and, you know, have a more like collective kind of orientation towards our life. You know, I think that's also something that should be encouraged, you know, to start thinking about the planet, thinking about your community versus just me, me, me. You know, we're living in the age of selfie, so to speak, you know, selfies and Instagram. And I think I'm seeing a lot of that in our culture. And I think that should be something that, I think that is a factor that we need to keep in mind in how we are kind of, how the youth is being influenced by the media and things like that. So,
oh my God, especially with everyone basically addicted to their mobile phone.
Exactly.
For several hours a day, which is just shooting images and sounds and videos and graphics, a lot of which are completely false.
Yes, yes.
Into their mind and addicting huge numbers of people. That's a whole other challenge, is how technology interacts with nature. It's a huge issue. Right. Huge issue.
So, yeah. So just get away from your phones and just go for a walk out in nature and just get connected to it. So you feel like that you need to do your part to take care and preserve the planet.
Well, absolutely. I have a bunch of friends where we just go out and we hike. And yeah. We backpack too, but we all love it. We go out in the desert, which is a very spiritual place, and hike in the desert. And it's good exercise too.
Yeah, it is. So. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And have you had any experiences of transcendence and what? I mean, I'm sure you have, but can you tell me about an experience that really stands out where you had this sense of, you know, wonder while being out in nature?
Oh my gosh, I have such a long list of them.
I know, but think about one or two that really, really stand.
Well, I can tell you one.
Yeah.
I can tell you one.
Please do.
Last year in August, there was a total eclipse of the sun.
Yeah, and I
heard about this about, I'm sorry?
I remember that. Yes, it was all over
the place.
Yes.
Well, you know, I decided, oh, that'd be kind of cool to see.
Yeah.
And I started studying where it would happen. And I saw, well, up in Wyoming, which is like two states north of where I live, it was going to happen. There's a thin, about a 40-mile wide path where you could see the total eclipse. I went up there. There were no hotels available even 2 years before because everybody had known about it and gone and booked up all the hotels in the Jackson Hole area.
Oh, okay.
And so couple of my buddies and my wife and I went up there and camped for 3 days and found a delightful campsite along a gorgeous river.
Mm-hmm.
And we camped out and we saw the total eclipse of the sun. And I'll tell you what, it is every bit as incredible as people say it is. It's indescribable. And I did have a feeling of transcendence, and I'm trying to still contemplate that particular transcendence. I am writing about that trip. I am writing about that experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had some, you know, this is very personal. I've never said this in public before, only to my friends, but I have had a vision.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a vision in the desert involving these issues. And I've had all kinds of transcendental experiences. And guess what? Mm-hmm. Everybody can have them. Okay.
Yeah.
Which I think is one of the things you want to talk about.
Right. Yeah.
So
I think nature can be a major, for a lot of people, nature is a major, you know, is the perfect trigger for these kind of experiences because of the beauty and the, so I'm not surprised that you had that kind of experience watching the solar eclipse.
For me, it's important, and I do want to share it with other people. I do want to teach other people. Again, you say, what can you do? Well, I do this on a personal level. When I am out with my friends, I will point out the stars to them. I will show them the plants. I will show them the frogs and the toads and the birds. And that'll then change their life. And well, you know, maybe that's only a few people. But hey, you know, I've introduced huge numbers of people to backpacking in the Grand Canyon because over the years I've brought, you know, I don't know how many people, 100 people, 200 people down there.
Mm-hmm.
And then a fair number of them will become fanatical. Mm-hmm. Then they will bring 100 people down. The Chief Justice of the Arizona Supreme Court, for example, Scott Bales, I took him in there for the first time. He became a fanatic. He goes in there several times a year. He, you know, so you can, if you are into this, you can teach, you can share, you can teach the younger generation. And there are many, many things that I can tick them off if you're interested, or we can do it one at a time, where I can suggest that people can start experiencing nature, okay, that they might want to take up as a hobby. And then they will have the spiritual experiences that we've been discussing.
Right. So, yeah, please do. Yeah.
Well, you know, I will, you know, you have to be willing to observe and you have to be willing to learn. You know, learning is one of the joys of being alive. And we should learn every day. We should never stop learning. And so what you need to do is you need to understand that you're going to be learning something. And I'll tell you, and this, I'm working on a documentary on this particular issue, and it's a personal issue for me, but one of the main ways that people can experience nature, it's very simple. It's observing birds, okay? Mm-hmm. Birds are tremendously important because they're basically the only surviving dinosaurs.
Yes, okay? I heard. Yes.
There are more... Mm. More species of birds than any other terrestrial vertebrate. There's 9,000 of them.
Yes.
Over 9,000 species of birds. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
And you know what? They're invisible to most people, mm-hmm. even though they're all around. Because, you know, if you don't have a sensitivity to something in your environment, mm-hmm. it's going to be invisible to you. You're not going to be conscious of it. So once you become conscious of these dinosaurs, mm-hmm. then you start looking at them, you go, well, what kind is that? And you, oh, I yeah. figured that one out. You write it down.
Sorry.
Well, what is that? And then you start making.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I only got to know that birds were direct descendants of the dinosaurs last year when I visited the Natural History Museum in Los Angeles. And I don't know if you've been there, but they have like such an amazing display of like a huge variety of birds that exists on the planet. And I was absolutely fascinated. I was awestruck. I just couldn't believe how much diversity there is amongst the birds, you know, the sizes, the colors, and, you know, different features that they have. And I don't know, for me, that was like a huge aha moment.
Well, and now you can start looking for them. Okay, so once you get into looking at birds, and I have other areas too, and I want to cover them because I think this is very important.
Sure, good.
Once you get into birds, then you realize, oh my gosh, they sing. Mm-hmm. And I'm a musician. I love music. So bird song has always been very important to me. And that's one of the reasons I go into and I record bird song. And you can listen to some of my recordings on the internet.
Yeah.
But the complexity and the beauty and the diversity of bird song, the ability of birds to sing mm-hmm. is unique in the animal kingdom, that the complexity of what they can do. They have all kinds of interesting behaviors. And the thing is, you'll see them all day long. I've seen peregrine falcons out my window in downtown Phoenix. Mm-hmm. If you just keep your eyes open, you will see nature. You will realize you're surrounded by nature, you're enveloped by nature, and that's the I think the key realization about sustainable development is that you are nature. Humanity is nature. Mm-hmm. To be an environmentalist, it's not like you're opposed to humanity. To be an environmentalist, you're a humanist, okay? Because we can't have our civilization or our culture without healthy functioning of ecosystems. Mm-hmm. So birding, which several hundred million people do already, but I recommend it to all civilizations and the citizens of particularly of the industrial nations that can, you know, get by binoculars and stuff, but you don't even have to have that. But you know, just being in tune with nature. I live in the desert. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I am able to watch the stars every night, and I have studied the constellations.
Wow.
And I'm very familiar with them. So every night when I go out, I see the stars and I see the constellations, and I feel like they're my friends.
Right.
Now, every year around the same time of year, the magnificent winter constellations come up, and then you start seeing weird things like planets in different arrangements.
Okay? Yeah.
You can see comets. Mm-hmm. You can see all kinds of things because yeah. that's, you can see total solar eclipses.
Yes.
To yep. look at stars. And so you can do that every day.
Yeah.
Unless it's cloudy, you can't see them. But the weather, mm-hmm. I used to wonder when I was a kid, at least growing up in the United States, why were all the adults so intrigued by the weather? Well, why was everybody watching the weather on TV? Well, when you get a little more mature, you realize, well, the weather is your environment. You know, what is nature doing? Is a freak storm coming towards me?
Right.
Is it going to be 125 degrees in Dubai?
Yeah.
What's it, you know, is there snow? Is our part of the continent, is it drying up? Is it getting precipitation? So, you know, the sunsets, the plants, the bugs. butterflies, hummingbirds, the stars. It's everywhere. Every day you can worship nature. I don't care who you are or where you live, even in the middle of a big urban environment, you can worship nature. And you can create nature. You can plant a garden. You can attract butterflies and hummingbirds. And that's what we're going to have to do, or we're not going to be able to have a sustainable culture.
So it's like you have to be able to change the lens that you use. So it's an attitude. It's about looking through the lens of wonder, you know, just being able to look out for that because it's everywhere. You just have to allow yourself to be pulled into that, to that beauty and that wonder that's out there. So
absolutely. And I want to add one final thing to that.
Sure, go ahead.
When you start doing that and when you start having a deeper understanding of systems and ecosystems and culture, you'll realize that humanity is nature too. So you can observe your community, you can observe your friends, your loved ones, your fellow citizens. You're viewing nature too. It's all the same thing. I mean, everything should be seen through this lens that we have diversity.
Yes.
But with diversity, we also have unity.
That's true.
They're part of the same system that's unfolding as part of a giant system, but the system expresses itself in diverse forms, which are constantly flowing and changing and unraveling and, you know, having their little tipping points and reorganizing. But it's all one big giant system of life on the planet expressing itself differently in different areas.
Yeah. I mean, we've got diversity, not just in plants and animals, but in the human race. And I think you're really right. I mean, we've got to learn how to embrace all the different kinds of human beings on this planet. You know, there's some, you know, even though there is a lot of differences in how we look, but I think there's a lot, we have a lot of commonalities that we should use to unite, and especially when it comes to, preserving the planet, because we're all earthlings, you know?
Very true. Very true. Yeah. I think that's one of the great challenges of our century, our very critical century. Is celebrating the diversity of humanity and trying to get along better because we're all in this together. I think that's one of your point, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if we're fighting against each other, then how are we going to, like, unite and work together to kind of preserve these ecosystems and take care of our home?
Yeah, we better do it. It's the only home we have. Now, I'm not real enthusiastic about moving the population of Earth to other planets. I think it's a nice little experiment, but I don't think we have enough money to ship, soon to be 10 billion people to Mars or whatever. So I think we better focus on saving the Earth.
I agree. This is a beautiful home that we've been given. So let's take care of it, right?
Absolutely. You know, it's just a wonder being alive. It's a wonder having a consciousness. It's something to celebrate every day. And part of our consciousness is our environment. And the reason we have a consciousness is because of this life that evolved here on Earth. And it's a good thing to worship because that's who we are, is we are a consciousness that exists in this system, in this ecosystem that evolved on our planet.
Right. Okay.
I hope that's not too far out there, but I think that's what's going on.
Definitely not for the listeners of the Dreamcatcher podcast.
Excellent.
Yeah. So, okay. That's, so we're going to end on that beautiful note. Thank you so much, George. It's been a real pleasure, a treat to speak to you today and get your valuable insights on this really important topic.
Well, again, thank you for talking to me. It's a great honor to be interviewed by you. And I hope some people do benefit from this.
Okay. So I hope you have a wonderful day.
Thank you very much. You too. Have a great day.
Take care. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed what you just heard, please subscribe to my podcast and feel free to share it with your friends and family. Take care and speak soon.